So, welcome to another edition of the Scottish Watches podcast. It is unfortunately the case that we have to inform you that Rick is no longer with us. It's been on the cards for a number of weeks. A lot of listeners have been in touch to sort of pass on our condolences, and it's appreciated. But it's okay because we've got somebody else to stand in for him. And we've got Ben. How are you doing, Ben?
Good. Thank you very much, Ricky. Yeah. So I'm the reincarnated Rick, I guess.
Yes. Slightly more English and a lot younger and more beautiful.
Thank you very much, Ricky.
First of all, I think you should probably introduce yourself to the listeners. So off you go.
Of course. Yeah. So my name is Ben Hodges. I think many people would know me as Ben James Hodges on Instagram. It was quite a while ago, actually, when I set up my Instagram account. And at the time, Ben Hodges wasn't available, so I stuck the James in there, my middle name. But some people have kind of latched onto that and now refer to me as Ben James Hodges. I'm like, no, you don't need to say my middle name as well. Just the first name is fine, and the last name's fine. But the middle name, yeah, you can kind of drop that. But still, people like to refer to me now whenever I go to these sort of red bar, time for a pint meets. They always refer to me with my middle name as well. Just slightly weird, especially when I've got my loved ones or my friends with me, and they're like, why'd they say your middle name as well?
So it's a bit like Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, right, just sneak it in there. Maybe I should initialize it back to the J or something.
I think you should. That'd be quite good. So you've obviously written a couple of articles. You've been involved with the website for a while, and we first met probably Basil.
Yes, our good friend, Adrian, Adrian Barkinjack.
Yes. That's his official double-barreled name now.
He's like, yeah, if people do it to me, I'm doing it back to him.
Definitely.
With the and as well.
And the and, yeah.
So I think we were sitting in that new area. Do you remember in Baselworld they had, it's where Amiga and all the Swatch Group used to be.
The media jerk-off area.
Before it used to be right at the far end of the building. Actually, it was a separate area outside of the building. So you go over the trams and you go to like this upstairs area. That was the press area before. Now, this year, it was the old Swatch area, because obviously they left and they did their Time to Move or Move to Time or whatever it's called.
That nobody remembers or cares about.
Yeah, completely forgot. I mean, you only had a few brands representing there. You didn't have the full Swatch group there, which was kind of a strange move, because I think Swatch themselves could probably do their own show. You know, they've got that many brands that they could do.
Yeah.
But anyway, so to occupy the area, we had this sort of nice seating area set up there, which the carpet got destroyed pretty much immediately.
Yep.
Give a few press journos a cups of coffee and their beer. That's going to go everywhere but their mouths.
It was a bit like a Glaswegian nightclub carpet.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm just surprised how quickly it went. I remember seeing some guy grab two pints from the counter and immediately spill both straight away and ask for another two again. I was like,
how much did those pints cost?
Oh, dead free.
They were free.
Yep.
Yeah, unfortunately, previous years, I was just a scumbag. Member of the public had to pay for a ticket, but this year managed to blag in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this
it's
was
not
the
that
first
hard,
year.
Is it? It's pretty easy to blag.
Register a domain name with watches in the title.
Yeah.
Send an email to Basel Press Office. You're jamming. Right. Yeah, that's where we met. We'd recorded a pod. Well, I recorded a podcast with Adrian. And then got introduced to yourself, and it was a really good event. I mean, this was my third one, and loved it. I'm going back next year, obviously. What did you think of it yourself this year, if you've obviously been before?
Oh, yeah, of course. I preferred it from my point of view, so being able to cover more brands, maybe brands I wouldn't have normally covered before, because they were like the big hitters that you had to get through. You had to get through the Amigas, Longines, Blancpain, Breguet. So having those kind of step aside meant I had more time to spend with other brands. So like Nomos, I had a great meeting with them. They were lovely. Spent more time with Breitling. Normally it was kind of quick meetings.
Adrian wasn't allowed to spend any time with Breitling. He didn't have 100,000 subscribers.
Oh my God. I still think he doesn't actually. I think he's still under that, which is ridiculous from Breitling. I've got to say actually, Breitling were the worst appointment I had the whole Baselworld meeting. It was dreadful. I mean, they're badly organized anyway, but we were 20 minutes early. They were 20 minutes late. They kept taking the watches off us as we were taking photographs of them. So literally snap a photo, flash goes off, they'll nick the watch and they'll take it. No, because they didn't have that many watches with them. So they were literally taking the watches under your nose and moving them to different rooms. And
they should have been told that this was a big watch event that happened. Yeah. I mean, it's happened a few times before in Switzerland.
Well, they released some watches, which they've since taken back. and not release them, which is quite surprising that the fact they were showing them in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And they change designs as they go out. So the press launch, the press pictures, they were different to the watches you saw in the windows, as well as being different to the watches you held in your hand. So when you took a picture, it could have been three different iterations of that same watch they were releasing. So they're a bit in cahoots, actually.
So they're not coming back?
No.
No.
I don't blame them for it. And I think they might be better off doing their own thing, this road trip thing, road show thing. See how that goes. I don't think they've done much in it yet.
No. Rick's a big fan of Breitling.
Yeah.
And I can't understand why, because he doesn't own one. And I had it out with him a couple of episodes ago saying, you know, well, you buy all these other brands and you never wear them. You spend good money. Why don't you buy one of these? And he hasn't yet. So we'll see if he puts his money where his mouth is.
So another watch he'll buy and not wear.
Yes.
He likes the Anna Digital watches, I've heard. The big emergency.
Yeah. He keeps talking about pulling the pin on one of those guys, which would be quite entertaining.
Around you guys, that was a dangerous game to own that watch.
Well, we are tonight, which leads quite nicely in that there was a lot of free alcohol I saw, but I'm driving, so I don't know about that.
I had one glass, I think that was it, and then one? Soft drinks from then. Well, actually, Iron Brew, to be Iron very Brew. Specific.
Yeah. Well, you are in Scotland.
Of course.
And it is the second national drink after Buckfast that isn't actually Scottish, but never mind. But no, we are here today at the Hodinkee Grand Seiko event. I don't know if it's a launch, because I don't know what they were launching. All we know is there was a couple of guys over from the States. They were down in London, where Adrian got to see them a couple of days ago, and got completely pissed, I heard. So he did that, and we got the chance to meet up. It was Jack Forster, and who's the other gentleman who was here?
James Stacey.
Yep, James Full Stacey. Bike. Yeah. So they were here doing a presentation, along with quite a few of the Grand Seiko team.
Yes.
A couple of interpreters as well, and basically every Grand Seiko that you could imagine, and Credor, and a few prospects were on show at the Lighthouse in Glasgow. And I managed to do a sneaky Instagram live halfway through when I remembered.
Oh dear.
Oh dear. Yeah, I'm good at leaking stuff. Handsome Rob was here.
Yes.
Signing autographs.
Very handsome as well.
He is indeed.
Wife pointed that out straight away. Thanks.
That's interesting. Yeah. And your wife is currently waiting with him in that hotel room around the corner.
I asked someone to take her out for dinner while we're doing this, it could be him.
you picked the Scottish bloke.
Aye, that's true.
Float light. Yep,
yeah.
You're fine. Yeah. It's all good. We've been trying to organise this for a number of months.
Good God, yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's mostly been my fault trying to find a spare minute. You guys have been very persistent, and I've been wanting to do it for a long time because I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I've got to say, both of you guys put on a great show weekly, twice
Thank you
weekly.
Very much.
It really does make my commute just absolutely fly by.
And you can understand the accents okay?
Of course, why not? You're speaking English, so.
Yes, not American, English.
Oh, Americans don't understand English either. So you say a glass of water, they're like, a what? Glass of water? No.
Glass of water? You want a glass of water?
Glass of water. Thank you.
You know, we have to deal with people over Nashville quite regularly.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there is a communication barrier.
Great town. Actually, I like the Tennessee accent. I think that's a very nice.
Do you like the female accent. Tennessee accent?
No.
Because I've got a podcast you could listen to. It's called 10 and 2.
I have listened to that podcast as well. Yeah, yes. I enjoy it very much. Yeah.
Yes, they're good. Did you manage to do a Catlin pose today?
I saw this doing the rounds, actually.
Uh-huh.
To be honest, I haven't taken many pictures of myself anyway.
Right.
I've been sort of snapping around town. We were actually coming into Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
We're staying in Edinburgh this week. But for this event, we just did that short trip over to Glasgow just for this event. But no, I haven't had the chance to do that. My wife is wearing a Tudor, actually. So maybe I'll snap a picture of her doing the Catlin pose and
Perfect.
That.
Perfect. That'll do. We got Handsome Rob to do one.
Oh, good.
We got Rick to do one before he passed away. So might use that for his...
Yeah, where is Rick anyway? You never said.
The morgue.
Up, of course.
Yeah. Yep. So post-mortem to be carried out Monday morning, I believe. Arrangements will be forthcoming afterwards.
Yeah.
Everybody's invited, by the way. So if you go to the Scottish Watches website, sign up for the mailing list, you too can come to Rick TikTok's funeral.
Interesting what they find out in the autopsy.
We shall find out what substances he has been abusing, because drugs are bad. So tell us a little bit about yourself, because obviously listeners probably don't know too much. They may have read an article or two on our website and other people's websites, including obviously Adrian's. So give us a little bit of background on yourself, how you got into watches, and what you're currently doing or about to do with watches.
Of course, yeah. So the reason I was at Buzzword, I was covering the event with the 8 past 10 team. I don't even know the 8 past 10. So they're related to or affiliated with with the Daily Watch account, which is currently and probably will be for a while the biggest watch account on Instagram. I think it's plus 2 million followers. So it's
Watch Anish.
He's probably a bit less, actually.
Is he?
Yeah, but I think he. I can't say for sure, but what I've heard that there's a lot of his followers are not the real followers. There's some sort of connection there.
I'll ask Adrian about that.
Yeah, allegedly. That's allegedly. The word I need to add.
Yep.
In, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Daily Watch, very organic. He started the watch account 2012, around Christmas time. So one of the very early ones in the, especially in the Instagram space.
Uh-huh.
But he just posted exactly what people wanted and liked at the time. Blue dials, steel watches, and he just kept doing that. And then he just snowballed into creating a massive account and then being an avenue for other brands to showcase their watches with his engagement base. Mm. So he just grew that into a very sort of tidy business for himself, which caught the eye of 8 Past 10, and they became affiliated. So now they focus mostly on the social media stuff, which is becoming, you know, huge business in this industry. And I think a lot of brands are stepping up the game in social media. There's still room to improve for certain brands, but I think it's going to be the future of things. But mostly I was doing the article side of with 8 Past 10. So I've been doing that since end of 2016, so a couple of years now.
Uh-huh.
In between, I did stuff, articles with yourself, Scottish Watches, Victor at watchnerd.com. So he was doing some great infographics. I don't know if you see
these ones. Yes, they are fantastic.
They are brilliant. Yep. So he does them all themselves. He, you know, checks with myself if this information is correct. So certain information, like the Gerald Genta one, I attended a seminar at Christie's in London with Michael Tay from The Hourglass. Who else was there? Roger Smith was there. Since Jack Forster, who is here tonight, actually.
Yep.
They were all there and they gave their talk on Gerald Genta as well as George Daniels. It was a kind of a tie-in between like two great figures in the watch industry. Who are sadly not here anymore. But they did a great chat on them and I got a lot of my information from that. So from that, I was able to create an article for 8 Past 10, which Watch Nerd saw. They wanted to link up and sort of add that into an infographic, so they kind of liaise with me, and then we just had a partnership from there where we've done sort of articles and infographic tie-ups. We've got some in the pipeline actually coming up, but that I'm going to step away with fairly soon. So the news I have, and I hope I can share this, I haven't checked with the guys, but from today onwards I will be part of the Fratello Watches team, covering some of the events they would normally go to in London.
Right.
That's kind of where I've stepped in, because obviously I've got the connections in London. I do the Red Bar, I do the Time for a Pint. There are other sort of outlets that sort of put together events. But they've always wanted someone based in London. And a lot of people want to join their team. A lot of people want to write articles for them. But they've got to be sort of right people. They've got to write very from a personalized point of view.
Yeah.
And to be very accurate with the facts. I think that's the two things they're very keen on. And to have that sort of intimate feeling, you know, okay, this watch may not be for me, but let's think about the person who this watch is suited for.
Yeah.
And think about from their point of view, not just to focus on yourself too much. So that's kind of where I'm going with that. So that'd be an interesting thing. See how it goes in the future. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I thought
that
we were going to get you for ourselves, but hey, pipped at the post. Hope you don't get stopped at customs.
I did. That was a great story. Awesome. And to get it written in that amount of time so succinctly.
Yep.
And post it during the whole event. Yeah, that was fantastic. Because, yeah, right from the heart, that was.
Right from the pocket as well.
Yeah.
What was the end result of that? Do you know?
I think you just paid the fines. Well, I paid the fines on both sides of the borders as well. So I got fined on the Swiss side.
Yeah.
Fined on the German side. Came over to the Swiss border. Got fined immediately straight after.
Yeah, this was a story that we covered where some of the guys had been across to one of the watch shows. It may have been Baselworld, the tail end of Basel.
It was Baselworld, yeah.
And because
kind of midway,
And they hadn't filled in declaration forms for customs. So
they were bringing over some
It was vintage pieces to a watch meet or something.
Yeah.
And basically they were stopped. And because they couldn't prove that they hadn't bought them or taken them across the border without paying, they had to stump up was it $4,000 or something?
Oh,
that was
a massive amount of money. They may have held back on the actual figure in the end.
Yeah, so interesting story and a bit of a scare one for anybody that's going across to Switzerland for SAHH or Basel.
And a lot of people do, actually. I've heard this around Baselworld crew that they bring watches to sell to people because it's the perfect place to do so. If you've coming from all sides of the earth and you're all going into one place.
Yeah.
Well, I might have been liaising with someone, emailing them back and forth. We're all going to be in here in the same place. Let's bring the watch that they're interested in and sell it to them while they're there.
Allegedly. Mm. Well, you just be careful. There's a good historical documentary with Christopher Walken where he explains how to smuggle watches. So you might want to look into that one. But no, that's fantastic that you've got this new gig. I want to make an apology to any listeners who are hearing background noise. I would apologise to Ben because he was one of the first people to complain about our audio quality back in the day.
I meant that as a joke. Right, okay.
I meant that as a joke.
It must have been 30, I can't remember many episodes ago now, but God, you do them so fast anyway. But it was back to back I was listening to.
Uh-huh.
And to be fair, the audio quality was very good, I've got to say. At the end of it, you were kind of bigging yourself up and bragging about it. And I thought, okay, very, you know. It is good quality, to be fair.
It was.
The next episode. What was it? You were talking into the wrong end of the mics.
Right, okay. Let me put you in the frame. The mics we use when we record remotely have got mics on one side and mics on the other. And you have to set them in a certain way if you're using lav lapel mics. So we did that for an interview episode. And then we forgot to turn the switch back around the other way. So we were talking into the wrong mics. So that happens. So who knows what the quality will be like. So I think we're sitting next to an aircon unit down the stairs from this Grand Seiko event where people are a little bit merry and leaving. Yeah. So who knows what might happen in the next half hour.
Yeah. And if people start coming downstairs,
we'll invite them on.
The stragglers.
Yes. Well, since you're not taking Rick's place, we're going to have to do more auditions, I suppose. Yeah.
So I did take the mic out of the audio quality, but it meant in a very joking way only because I listened to it back to back and it went from really high quality to really low quality.
Ultra dog
talking
shit.
Into the wrong end of a mic. And I just thought, oh, I'll make a quick comment. And then you were like, huh? Your famous, huh?
That's when I'm looking for clarification.
Right.
Yes.
So I think of Louis Theroux in that way. I don't know if you know Louis yep. Theroux. He's a documentary maker. So he's very good at playing dumb to get people to say things they wouldn't normally say. And I think you're pretty good at playing dumb, actually.
Why, thank you.
It comes quite natural to you.
It does indeed. Even more so to Rick. God rest his soul.
Yeah.
But, no, it's been an interesting, let's see. It's probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
6 months since Basel. There's been a lot happening. Hell of a lot happening in the UK.
They won't stop releasing watches. It's crazy.
It's at least 300 years they've been doing it, I believe. Something like that. So,
well, it used to be a very much one event in the year. Actually, it used to be right at the beginning of the year. And here are the watches for the year. Go buy them. Here, trade shows, basically.
Yep.
You know, tradespeople come in, retailers come in. Now it's just a weekly event when there's always something new. And it's good in a way. Something great comes along. It kind of gets annoying in a way because it's just saturation. And you just think, what about the watches you released like 2 months ago? Have you forgotten about those? Or are they still going? Or,
That's an interesting way of thinking about it. Because I suppose a watch purchase is a bit like, it's an expensive purchase. So Ford don't bring out new models of the whatever every couple of weeks. So I can kind of see what you mean by that. But then again, everyone's now fighting against everyone else. And I think the problem at the moment is limited editionitis.
Fatigue, definitely.
Yeah. And everything that's coming out, we were looking at a Doxa 300, I think it is.
Which one? I mean, they come in different dial colours and they're all limited, but then together they're a big group.
It was the one that's limited to 130 pieces.
I think that might be the they're all vintage inspired, re-edition. But that might be an even more vintage inspired one, yeah.
No, they're doing it right because there's 130 pieces. It's not like Omega, who decide 7,000 pieces.
Hey, there's probably about 50,000 people on the wait list for that watch. I mean, you got to understand, we come from the very enthusiast community where we're looking at 7,000. We're like, 7,000? How on earth can 7,000 people want that watch? Trust me, there's a subgroup. Well, actually, it's a bigger group than the enthusiast community.
X wasn't Floatlight.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that's subscription. So you just... Whatever comes along, yeah.
It's like some people pay a certain amount of money out of their wages to support a child that they shouldn't have had. Floatlight just sends a part of his paycheck off to Omega every month in Switzerland. I think that's how it works anyway. That's what he's telling me.
Yeah. So that watch has got a lot of demand for it, and that's just the Bond connection. And to be honest, it's meeting that demand and still keeping it high because there's obviously more to come. We know of some...
Is there?
You might have heard of a film coming out next year.
Was it not supposed to be coming out this year?
Someone broke their foot or ankle or something. But yeah, there's obviously more watches to come. This watch is not a watch. The watch we're talking about is the limited edition On Her Majesty's Secret Service watch, which is a silly film to sort of do a 50-year anniversary for, because Omega were not part of Bond at the time.
Nope.
It was very much a Rolex thing. It kind of mixed between Rolex and I think Breitling and Seiko were kind of in the early days as well. Mm. So Thunderball was the Breitling top time.
Seiko Digitals appeared in the Roger Moore years, I remember
that's
then.
That's right, yeah.
Playing a little bit fast and loose there with the special editions for commemorative things that
this
never happened.
This one didn't do it for me at all. Just overdid it, I think. If maybe if they paired back a few things, it would have been okay. I still like the Seamaster as it is, the wavy dialed one. And I like the Pierce Brosnan connection. That's kind of where I first got into to watches. I mean, I'm saying, you know, these subgroup of people who are interested in the Bond watches only, that's literally how I got into watches, to be fair. So, yeah, I can't knock them for it.
So how old are you then?
I have just turned 30 in the last 2 days.
Well, happy birthday and congratulations at the same time. So if you got into watches, Bond, Brosnan era, that would be what, the Quartz Seamaster Professional range?
That's the one, GoldenEye. Yep.
Everybody talks about this watch. Jody from Just One More Watch, Floatlight himself, the man, the legend.
Specifically the Quartz one as well.
Yeah.
Which in our community, you know, Quartz is the sort of center of the community, but I didn't mind that it was Quartz because it's the Pierce Brosnan GoldenEye watch. And the later Pierce Brosnan films weren't as good as GoldenEye. GoldenEye was definitely his crowning achievement.
And a very good Nintendo 64 title as well.
I actually probably got into the game first, then the movie. In fact, I watched the film to try and spot where the game levels were based and everything like that, yeah.
Right. Yeah. There we go. We brought in retro gaming, Bond. We need some music references because we've got the films done, but we'll get to that later on. So where did you go then from the Bond era watches? What was the first watch that you actually got yourself then?
So probably back then I was wearing Casios, I would say. In my teens, I wore a Seiko titanium chronograph. Actually, I wore that probably way up to my mid-20s. So it's only recently I've got into the watches full-on. And that was only because my dad gave me his Breitling as a gift when I turned 25. And yeah, just been wearing that watch. But I think when I was given that watch and wore it for the first time in London, I was really hoping someone would point it out and go, hey, nice watch, friend. Never happened, because in London, no one ever points or speaks to anyone else on the train or tube. It just doesn't happen.
Okay. Unless they're robbing you.
Unless they're robbing you. It's like, hey, nice watch, gone.
Yeah. You just hear that moped going off into the distance. Yeah.
So from there, I kind of got interested in the watch itself and thought, okay, what else is there? And then just opened up my eyes when I saw Patek Philippe for the first time. And that really was the watch that opened the world for me. It was just a Calatrava Platinum watch. Very simple, but it was very exquisite, very tasty. I describe a lot of Patek Philippe's as tasty. Okay. Not necessarily something I'd buy yet. I'm not at that stage yet.
If you were in Nashville, you would say they were cute and adorable.
maybe not.
Obviously, that was Quartz. That was Casio. When did you get into mechanical timepieces, Swiss pieces, more sort of luxury lines?
My first Swiss mechanical watch was, of all things, a Jaeger LeCoultre Reverso.
Okay.
Which is in the deep end straight away.
Yes.
I was trawling around Bond Street, I think it was, and I went into a few shops and I kind of got a standoff feeling from most of the staff where they were like, okay, where's the money? I think they're used to the clients to come in from abroad. They're there to buy a watch. I was in the Mappin & Webb boutique back in Bond Street, and someone walked in and just said, I'd like a £70,000 watch. Doesn't matter what, it has to cost £70,000. Okay, what money are you trying to hide here? I won't say which region they're from, but yeah, it's one of those type of clients. And
great weather in Colombia. You know, it's a story that we've heard. We've obviously got a lot of friends in dealerships in Glasgow and Edinburgh, and I actually mentioned one of the recent podcasts about one of the guys we know where people would walk in and look as if they were tramps, walk up and say, I'd like that £70,000 AP, and just buy it. Off they go.
Yeah.
So you can't judge a book by a cover, because
crazy.
Again, look at Floatlight.
At least he was coordinated tonight. Normally he's got some flashy jacket on and weird shoes.
He had the clown shoes on.
Oh, okay.
I did notice them. And he had some rather fetching specs.
Yes.
Everybody says he looks like Joe 90.
Well, I was confused because I'd never seen him wear glasses before. I know he occasionally wears them, but I've never seen him at an event wearing glasses. Normally he's either in the contact. So at first I didn't recognize him.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see the memes that have been made of him with his glasses on?
No, I haven't seen those.
Well, listeners, you're in for a treat. Check out the show notes, because people have taken sound bites from me and Rick saying things about Floatlight and have made memes with little speech bubbles of Joe 90 saying things like Seikyo and you're a proper Jeremy. So we'll put them in the show notes.
I like the way he says Seikyo and he doesn't back down from it.
No, and he in the one sentence he will say Seiko and then Seikyo and just straight across it.
Is it Grand Seikyo or is it Grand Seiko to him?
We haven't got a final judgment on that one.
Need a soundbite from him about that, yeah.
We'll need to give him a phone.
My Dutch brothers at Fratello, they say it Grand Psycho, which always freaks me out.
That's an interesting one. Maybe you should use that.
Yeah. I think it was on a recent video, you know, when they did that Seiko 5 sports collection.
Yeah.
They are talking the whole way through and it's Psycho, Psycho, Psycho. I'm like, there's a lot of psychos in this place.
There's a guy on YouTube who does deconstructions of other YouTubers. And I don't know if he's Dutch or German, but he does the same thing when he talks about Grand Psycho. And the first time you hear it, you're like, whoa, what? But yeah, we'll have to introduce that one to Dave and see how he gets on with it. So this year, obviously you're involved in the watch scene, the community and the industry. What have you seen this year that sort of tickled your fancy that's a little bit different from the norm?
Well, there's a brand which is very close to my heart. Even people refer to me as Mr. Oris. Okay. I'm a bit of an Oris fanboy. I'm not the Oris fanboy. It's my good friend Aspen. But
did you get flown to Shanghai?
I wish I got flown to Shanghai and, you know, burn all the jet fuel.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I wasn't. But the collection I was particularly interested in was the Clean Ocean, the Great Barrier Reef model. In fact, it was seeing the watch in Basel, the Great Barrier Reef 3, fell in love with it straight away. Although it was really hard to see the dial gradient because the booth lights in Basel are horrendous for anything.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until they brought the watches over to London, I got to see them in the daylight outside, that the blue just like came alive. And I was like, yes, it has to be that watch. And in fact, the Aquis range, I've never particularly been interested in. It's Oris's kind of modern interpretation of a diver, uh-huh, as opposed to the 65, which is definitely a vintage inspired diver. So it was great to see that in a new color that I really appreciated. Plus, I liked the date wheel being kind of recessed but central, keeping mm-hmm symmetry to the dial so you can see all the indices. And the color is just incredible. It blows my mind every time I see it. Just looking at it now, it's kind of
should we have done a wristwatch check? Did we forget that?
Missing Rick. This is
we're only about. I know Rick holds it together.
Yeah,
he really is the glue.
He knows everything. All the movie references, all the references of watches,
all the actors,
absolutely,
all the singers.
Yeah, God rest his soul.
All his. We do miss him.
Yeah,
we should start a GoFundMe page to get a commemorative plaque made.
I thought you were going to say to like reincarnate him or something.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that
Zombie
later.
Zombie Rick.
Zombie Rick. Well, it is coming up for Halloween.
That's true.
And yeah. I was thinking of doing a special seance edition. And we shall get someone to obviously speak to Rick from the other side. See how that one goes. So what is it you're wearing just now then?
So it's the watch I'm describing. It's the Oris Great Barrier Reef 3. So the third edition of the Great Barrier Reef Foundation watches. This one in particular has a recessed date wheel, kind of goes to the circumference of the dial, like a sector dial.
Mm-hmm.
The other watches in this trilogy are the Clean Ocean, which is a slightly smaller one with the plastic back, plastic kind of mosaic design from reclaimed plastic, which everyone likes to take the mick out of me by saying, is your watch the one with the plastic back? Floatlight, even tonight, mentioned it. It's like, is that the one with the plastic back? I'm like, for God's sake, stop asking. You know it isn't. You have one yourself. You know this one doesn't have it. And the other one is a slightly bigger Blue Whale, which was announced a bit later on. That's the chronograph. That's quite a big watch, actually, thick as well as wide diameter. And they come as part of a trilogy box set in the reclaimed plastic box.
We saw
box.
That. Yeah, I didn't realize that the three of them were for that 7,000 and something price.
Yes.
I thought that was just for the middle watch because that's where the little price tag was. And I thought maybe we had. And then it was Rick that said, no. And obviously Rick knows everything.
Of course, yeah.
So I should have believed him. But no, I found out afterwards it was the three watches for just over seven. Is it 7,400?
Maybe yeah, 7,600? I mean, it's a great price. I think it's 7,500, but it's a fantastic price for three watches, three great watches. In fact, Oris really do punch above their weight. This is such a great value proposition. This watch in particular is under £2,000. And it's just a great watch. I wear it pretty much all the time. I switch it up between the rubber strap and the steel bracelet. But I do prefer it on the bracelet, actually. It's kind of shiny and nice. And I like shiny things, as Carl Ruiz, our dearly departed friend.
They're all dying.
I know.
Dying off.
I know. It's this podcast life. It's just too strenuous on people.
It drives people to ruin. So it does. But no, that is a lovely piece. And even under this shit lighting,
yes,
I'm seeing the dial bouncing around.
Spotlights, watch photographer's favorite thing in the world.
Yeah. No, it is. It's lovely.
Thank you.
And today I have got my vintage Bulova Accutron, which is the 214 Spacefear. It's the tuning fork watch, the first commercial electronic watch, because there is a little bit of debate about who came first. And this one here, it doesn't have a quartz movement, doesn't have a crystal in it or anything like that. It uses a tuning fork, and that vibrates at either 340 or 360 vibrations per minute. So if you hold it to your ear, you can hear it hum. I was wearing this one because I thought, well, I'm going to a Grand Seiko event. I don't have a Grand Seiko. I don't have a spring drive. What's the closest thing I have to a spring drive? And I've had this for about a year now. Got it for about £600. They are now just about double on eBay for a really good condition one. And I love it. I think it's great. And it's a big talking piece. As Carl Ruiz would say, you know, it's a lecture watch. People want to find out more about it. And tonight, when I was speaking to Jack Forster, he stopped me and said, is that a real Bulova Accutron? Is that a Spacefear? And I said, yes, it is. And he says, that is one of the first memories I have of watches, because my dad had one, and that's what I remember when I was a kid, my dad and his Spacefear Accutron.
That's amazing.
So I thought, oh, there you go. So I had a little chat with him about things.
Well, he knows his watches, doesn't he?
He taught me things about the city I was born in. He taught me about Glasgow and the reason for the settlement in Glasgow, and the way the River Clyde was like this crossing area, and it's similar to a river over in Geneva. And I'm just standing there like, this dude is teaching me shit I didn't learn at school.
Oh my God.
That is mental.
His mind is crazy.
Yeah, but he explains the most probably boring subject in such an animated way that you just tilt your head and absorb. So maybe we should actually talk, now we've done the wristwatch check, maybe we should explain more about tonight's event. It's been in the planning for a good while. We spoke to Handsome Rob on a previous edition of the podcast, and he told us this was happening, but to kind of keep it under wraps.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an association with Red Bar, as most good things are. And when they actually dropped email to people in Glasgow and Edinburgh to say, there's a Hodinkee event, do you want to come? They had it filled within 40 minutes.
Yes.
And the waiting list, waiting list for everything, the waiting list was massive. And when I spoke to Jack earlier, he was telling me about the London one, they said they could have had 1,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, that was how popular it was with the Red Bar community.
In fact, it was because I couldn't make the London one that I wanted to do the Glasgow one. Monday the 14th, that was my birthday. And wife had a nice surprise for me, so I couldn't do that. I didn't really want to do anything on my birthday in London anyway.
Yeah.
So I found myself in Edinburgh, and Floatlight texts me saying, are you going to be in Glasgow? I was like, actually, I'm going to be in Edinburgh. It's like, well, make your way over to Glasgow. You're coming to the event. So I thought, brilliant. Can I bring my wife with me? It's like, so that was how I got to this event. I'm actually staying in Edinburgh for this week.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've just turned 30. Thought I'd spend my time up in Scotland, you know.
That's great. So you've told us, you've just turned 30. You've told us the day of your birthday so people can work out your date of birth.
Man.
And you've just said that you're out of your house for a week.
So I'm not very good as Rick is, at keeping my secret identity hidden.
Identity theft is rife.
Oh, yeah.
So guys, you've probably got about half a week to play with the stuff you find in Ben's house.
Oh my days.
Yeah. Fun and games. So what have you done up in Scotland then since you've been here?
Well, they say life after 30 is all downhill. Mm-hmm. So I thought I'd come to Scotland and get the ball rolling, really.
So whiskey?
Yes, whiskey, mm-hmm. Zoo, unfortunately.
Yep.
I know it's just a zoo like any other zoo, but my wife really wanted to go to it. Other things planned, just milling about, really. Just going to get flavour for the town. Actually pretty lucky with the weather so far. So yeah, I can just have a good walking tour of everything.
That'll change tomorrow.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, really. I was told it was Glasgow is the danger area for the rain. That's where everyone gets beaten up with the rain first, and then Edinburgh gets like the schmuckers later.
It's probably the people in Edinburgh are so under the influence of heroin, they don't notice the rain quite as much. Over here, like, the alcohol wears off quicker.
So where they feel train spotting as well. Maybe it's that.
Yep. We've mentioned this film quite a number of times.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good documentary.
Can't help myself. When you're in Scotland, you can't help yourself.
Exactly. Obviously, at this event we're at, I didn't expect this to be anywhere near as busy at all. It was packed. We turned up early, as we did, and there was already folks here. We came in, there was a presentation, there was lots of freebies. No drinking sandwiches.
No.
Rick would be disappointed.
Yep. But if he was here.
If he was here, he'd be very disappointed. If he's looking at us from the other side, if he's looking down on us, then he will be mighty pissed off.
Or looking up above, maybe.
Or, well, those videos haven't aired yet, so we don't know. We don't know where he is. But no, it was a really, really good event, and they pulled out the stops. We've had only a couple of big events in Scotland that I can remember with Redmar. One was quite recently with Mont Blanc through in Edinburgh, and that was very good. And this one, I think they even raised the bar further.
It was excellent.
Yeah.
I think the turnout was great, and it wasn't just Redmar. It was a mixture of other people, people close to the brand, people close to Hodinkee that managed to get a spot. But I think Floatlight played the game a little bit, because I think he got 35 places and he may have fumbled the numbers. Yeah, maybe he's dyslexic, maybe he switched the numbers around.
Could be But no, it was good, and I bumped into a lot of listeners on Instagram. People don't put photos of their faces. Yep. It's all wrist shots or random stuff. So people were coming up saying, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, uh-huh, it's Gavin, it's Chris, it's Mike. I'm like, mm-hmm. And then they showed me the watch. I'm like, or they say, I mailed you like a month or two ago about such and such. And I'm like, now I remember who you are. Brilliant. So it was good to just meet a whole load of people that use the website or on Instagram, listen to the podcast, have a good chat with them. I was testing out a new camera that I got. So hopefully we'll have some video clips, because Adrian couldn't make it tonight.
No.
I think he's still crying in the house.
I think it's his birthday tonight, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought he was just upset about Rick, but maybe he's out partying.
Maybe.
Who knows? One or the other.
A river.
So it was just up to me, really, tonight to look after things. It was good. It was warm, but some of the watches that we saw just blew my mind. Again, that red dial,
yes.
The 269.
I saw that. It looks like curtains. Well, in a nice way.
That's not nice. That is my favourite Grand Seiko.
You like it, yeah?
I do, because they didn't mess the dial up by sticking the power reserve at an odd angle somewhere. That is one of my favourites. And if it hadn't sold out, it could possibly be the one that I went for. But
yeah, I really like Grand Seiko. In fact, the watches I was particularly interested in were the new Seasons collection.
Right.
This was announced back in June, but actually only just delivered to boutiques in US just now.
Oh.
So these are a series of four watches, which are not limited. Thankfully, it's not
these
a limited
These are US
edition.
Exclusives.
Only US.
Yeah.
So you've got these two spring drive models, one with sort of a grayish kind of wintry dial. That's how they describe it. There's a spring watch, which is cherry blossom influence.
Right.
And then I believe there's a summer watch, which is like the green vibrant. And then the autumn watch is like the midnight moon, dark blue kind of color. But it's a series of four watches. The spring driver models are in titanium. The high beat movement watches, they're both in steel. But both have that kind of bright, shiny polish finish on them, Zeratsu polishing on them. Very, very, very nice. But unfortunately, US only. And I tried to sway Rob a little bit. He said, nope, that's very much US. They're keeping production just for the US.
He's such a company man.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't understand it from Grand Seiko. I mean, I do in a way. The US is a huge market for them, and they introduced their more and more models there. And it used to be that they only had their limited editions or special watches for the Japanese domestic market,
mm-hmm.
which they wanted to keep it that way. But now they're growing in the US, but they're kind of leaving the UK and Europe out of the picture a little bit. I think it would have come. Firstly, the market in UK especially needs to sort of pick up the whole Grand Seiko thing, with a differentiate the brands, and you know, notice that Grand Seiko is a cut above the Seiko watches they used to. So I still think there's time. Maybe it's the marketing side of it. Maybe people need to adopt it more. But hopefully there are going to be some watches coming to us which are UK, Europe only. That would be a nice sort of thing, but I think it's a few more years down the line. And this is only speculation. This is not based on what anyone said. This is only what I think.
Allegedly. Are you hearing like squeaking puppies, as if somebody's putting puppies in a grinder downstairs?
Yeah, who ordered the dog?
I don't know. Maybe it's a sign from the other side. Who knows? But no, that's
crowd. Let's check.
Well, the thing is, we could play back this recording and there could be EVPs from Rick.
Yeah.
You just don't know.
No, you need to play it backwards. And in slow motion.
We'll do that. We shall do that and see what we can find. But the Grand Seiko stuff, it's something I didn't know much about a year ago. Well, maybe a year and a half ago. And slowly but surely, I've come round to it. And then when we've seen them at different events, we've seen them at James Porter, we've seen them over at Chisholm's, you get to handle them and it has got the quality, the finish, the fit, and the mechanics of something that is three times the price.
Yeah.
But it's just getting the public to buy into it and understand and to hold it. And I take it, obviously, down south, it's a lot easier to get access to these things. Up in Scotland, I think we've only got two dealers.
There's the Grand Seiko boutique on Knightsbridge Road, which is a great... I went to the opening, which was fantastic. Rob was there, Handsome Rob was there.
Handsome Rob, yes.
Handsome Rob. And it was a great event. It was great, a lot of watches there. They had some Japanese-only models there, which is very interesting to see, and see the difference side-by-side with some of the more westernized models.
What would the differences be then?
The text, actually. So I found with the Japanese models, they had this very sort of floaty, fluid text, whereas the UK models, or Western models at least, they had very blocky text. So slight differences, but I think people tend to veer to the more Japanese specific watches just because they think, well, coming out of Japan, this is, must be what the Japanese ethos is, the design. So I don't know why they make that change. In fact, they do it quite a lot where they change things just slightly, which I feel is a little bit unnecessary. Maybe they can be more globalized and sort of make models for everyone, a bit like what Rolex has been doing for years now. And I think other brands are now keep picking up on this whole, let's do a global watch for everyone. Mm-hmm. Maybe that might dilute some of the Japanese-ness of their watches, which they're very proud of, and so they should be. So maybe that's what they're trying to cling on to, that kind of, this is what we want to, how we want to represent our watch and how we want to represent Japan as a center of excellence.
Yeah, I find it strange because you're talking about that, the history and the heritage, and I can see, listening to Jack explain about when he was over and he saw this one guy in his job, start to finish of his shift, excluding lunch break, is to basically take hands one by one, put them in a little, it was a brass or an iron pot, and then fire it to get the hands to blue, one at a time, to the perfect amount of time, the perfect temperature, and then take it off so that they would be spot on.
Yeah.
And that's the level they go to. So you look at that and it's an artisan, it's a craft, it's heritage, it's when you look at people in kimonos and all that Mr. Miyagi stuff. And then suddenly they've got a Godzilla watch and a GTR watch for Nissan and things like that. So it's interesting they've got both sides of it and there's no real middle ground.
Mm.
I really do hope that the public start to take more of an interest. And I think Handsome Rob, the team here in the UK, they are pushing out, they're doing more. And a couple of years ago, nobody really knew.
They're doing great work to get the brand out there.
They are.
Instagram is a great help in that way. It's a great tool for that.
We're really good at showcasing their stuff before they even know about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually was on that live stream watching that and thinking, oh, that's a very cool watch. And then it went away. I was like, what happened?
Yeah, what happened was we got told to delete it.
By Grand Seiko themselves?
Handsome himself.
Ah.
May have told us to not be putting
that
online.
Because you've been hanging out for that cease and desist from someone. So I thought maybe this was your first one.
No. I think the Scottishness scares them off. We're hitting probably, this is episode 82, 83, 84. Round about there somewhere.
Just and keep so counting.
Yeah, well, Rick's not here to fluff up.
Oh, yeah,
because
he
word.
Always knew exactly which number episode this was.
Yep, he always did. That's why we stopped him mentioning them at the start. Also, we sometimes put them out of sequence.
Yep.
Just depending on what's happening, who we've got on, things like that. But no, it's good to see that Grand Seiko are really making some strides. Today's event, I think it turned a lot of people, not even turned them, it informed a lot of people that didn't know anything. I've been to Basel, I've seen them in real life, I've been to the open days, but a lot of people that turned up today haven't. They've never seen them in real life, they've never been into like James Porter or Chisholm's Through in Edinburgh, they've never had actually handled one to see what the big story is all about.
Absolutely, and it's so important to see the watches first. A lot of people nowadays are just buying watches online and just receiving them and going, oh, that's not for me, and then having to go through the fumble of having to send it back or sell it on. And I think it's very important that there are a lot of outlets where people can see the watches and just try them on. And Red Bar is great for that because there's bound to be someone coming along with a particular watch you wouldn't have seen elsewhere. And then you get to try on and see and go, actually, it's not for me, or it doesn't fit my wrist, or it's not quite size, or it's perfect for me. I really want to get my own.
Yeah.
Red Bar is just opening up that. And I've been with Red Bar since 2016, so one of the first Red Bar London events they did. So there, back then there was eight of us.
Eight,
and we struggled to get more. We sat around one little table in a little bar in the corner.
Was it red?
Actually, you say that. The very first, I didn't go to this one, but there was a Red Bar event in London at the Red Bar, a place called Red Bar, which I... turned out to be a not very nice place anyway. So we went to this other place. I can't remember the name it was now.
The Blue Bar.
We outgrew that very quickly. And now I can't fathom how many Red Bull London members there are now, maybe 500, probably bigger than the US one.
I was told that. I was told by Dave that the London one is probably the biggest around. And the Manchester one, that launched recently, and they had 40-odd people.
Yeah.
At their sort of inaugural Red Bar event. They'd done local meetups before that.
Yeah.
It's just, it blows my mind that for so many communities existing, model railroads, scale electric, stamp collecting, coin collectors that all have meetings and catch-ups and things like that, for wristwatches to not have taken off in this country in a sort of enthusiast way of doing things, it's just kind of mind-boggling. I met a lot of people tonight, and you're mentioning Red Bar. I met some guys tonight that have never been to an event before, and they were apprehensive about coming along. They didn't know what to expect. They felt out of their depth. They weren't introverted. They were people that, you know, would hold a conversation, no problem at all. They just didn't understand, or they couldn't understand other people having the same engagement and interest in wristwatches. But then when they turned up and they saw people talking, they started to open up. They came over, they said hello. I saw a guy that had never been to any of these before, coming in slowly. He spoke to me, then he started to go around the room, and by the end of the night, he'd made loads of new friends, added folks on Instagram, had taken lots of wrist shots with other folks, and that's what it's all about.
I think that's the great part about Red Bar.
Yeah.
For me, it was easy because there was only a few of us, so you kind of had to talk to people or else you were just there looking awkward.
Yeah.
But now when I've been going to the events again and again and again, and new people coming along, I always make an effort to chat to them, ask their name, what they're into, what they're wearing on the wrist. It's a great icebreaker just to say, what's on your wrist?
Exactly.
They show, and then you go, oh, I really like it. Oh, that's really cool. I haven't seen one of those. And people just open up the world to you. They talk about how they got it, why they got it, how they love it, where they wear it, and things like that. It's fantastic. And I think I met Sam at her very first Samantha.
Mm-hmm.
At her very first Red Bar event, which was an Oris event, not in Shanghai. And that was it was great to talk to her. But at the end of the night, yeah, again, she was talking to everyone in the room and just opens up. And in fact, I remember a little shy boy called Adrian, who was coming along to the events, and he was mostly focused on shooting content. So I kind of got that from his point of view, that he just wanted to focus on creating content for his website and his YouTube account. But you know, you can crack people, and he was pretty much easy to crack. As soon as you talk about Rolex, it just, the world opened up, and he's got all this information about it, and he was talking about why he bought this particular model.
Flip it.
Great. Yeah, of course, yeah. Big it up and then flip it. That's it.
Loads of videos about it. Investment value is boom. Kermit for sale. So no, it is. It's, I'm really happy the way things have gone. I'm happy it was because of Red Bar. I've said many times that Scottish watches came to be.
Yeah.
We had Alan on a previous edition, and he runs the Glasgow branch, I suppose, or the chapter as they call it, Red Bar. And it was because of him that me and Rick kind of ended up chatting, and a year ago decided to do this silly little thing.
Formerly Rick.
Sometimes it feels like he's still here.
Yeah.
You know, R.I.P. But no, it's a fantastic thing. If people haven't signed up for it already, this is what you need to do. If you're in Scotland, which you're probably not, because we've got more listeners spread everywhere else when you add it together than Scotland alone.
I've signed up for Glasgow. I've signed up for Edinburgh.
Yeah, sign up.
Just on the off chance.
Go to Red Bar Glasgow, Red Bar Edinburgh on Instagram. There should be a link in the bio. Click that and fill in your details. They do a very simple security vetting check just to make sure you're not some dodgy person, which you probably are if you're listening to this. They will make sure that you've obviously got a normal social media presence, that you post pictures of watches. You've got an interest in things, and may ask you, you know, have you been referred by somebody, and you will be added to the mailing list. And then there's events such as tonight, although this really is the pinnacle event, but they have organic meetups in function rooms and pubs, secluded things, private, so there's like not the public walking around. And this is where you can turn up and you can be talking to someone and they've got a £300 watch on, and then they tell you that their collection's worth £200,000. It doesn't matter what you're wearing, doesn't matter your background, your job, your age, anything at all. Everybody's there for the same love of watches.
Yeah.
And you can make some really good friends. It just blows my mind that nobody really knows about this, and Red Bar hasn't kicked off bigger, but it is now.
From the security point of view, it makes sense that people might be a little bit apprehensive bringing on their collection for anyone to pick up and look at and see. Red Bar takes security very seriously.
Yeah.
It happens with the venues we choose, how we choose location, but also how we keep that a secret, because obviously we can't just publicize that where we are, what we're doing, because anyone could see that and come along. So very, very careful with that. And I think that's very important for people to realize not to tag the location where they are, even if it's at a branded event at a very well-known location. Just keep it secret. Maybe post it the next day if that's the case. And that comes with the vetting process as well. A lot of people complained about how long it takes for them to become a member or get invited to their first event. There's no sort of screening process for who you are. It's just who you know and what you do. So if you've got an account where you've got lots of watches, that might put you further ahead, but it really helps to know a an existing member already and let them vouch for you.
Yep, totally. And one thing that we've mentioned before, but we should sort of reiterate, is there isn't a charge for joining Red Bar. Some people might think an event like this, you might have to pay £50, 75. I mean, to go to Basel's about 75 quid a day.
Yeah.
To go to Red Bar events, there is no charge. The organic ones where they're in function rooms, all they really ask is that you buy a couple of soft drinks at the bar, just so that, you know, wherever they're hosting the events are happy that they're making some revenue. It's not Red Bar that are making revenue. This Hodinkee event, there was no charge to anybody that came along. Mont Blanc's the same. Events in Chisholm Hunter, events at James Porter, they never charge you. But you get free drink, free munchies, and you get to play with some cracking watches. Do you think we've sold people on Red Bar enough?
I think so.
Move on now?
Yeah.
That's good. So, what's next for you? You've landed this gig with Rotello.
Yep.
And we're coming up for the end quarter, the last quarter of the year. It's the Christmas rush. What's on the horizon for you, both work-wise and maybe to end up on your wrist?
So, I don't think for myself there'll be any further watch purchasing. I'm not a serial watch purchaser. I don't have to buy anything that comes along just because it's new and shiny.
Limited edition.
Or the, how you call it, shitters?
Shitters. Invictus, yes.
So I'm very much a careful watch buyer. If there's something that really takes my fancy, my interest in it will go up. But if it comes to a slight thing that maybe turns me off, then I won't go for it. I'm very, very particular with what I buy. So I don't think there's anything else, although there is one watch from a brand that has featured on this podcast a few times, a lovely English gentleman by the name of Nick.
Ooh.
So he's got some watches coming up. I don't know when, could be this year, next year. And I think they're absolutely fantastic. And I like where they're taking the brand. I think they've made it known that they're moving away from their quartz-based movements. The Redcliffe Continental, I believe, was their sort of last sort of swan song for their quartz. And now They're focusing on the Brunswick, moving that forward. And I think they're fantastic. Nick is a true gentleman. The way he does things, it's the old Atelier kind of way of doing things, taking the watches to the people. Not everyone, I've got to be honest. But if you want that experience can be given to you. And the straps are fantastic. But for myself, no, I don't think there'll be any more watch. I mean, I say that. It's famous last words. The US collection of Grand Seiko watches we were looking at. There were some watches in there which I'm very keen on, and I've been given the very hard no from Rob, from Handsome Rob.
Mm-hmm. But we know a couple of girls in Nashville who will let you down if you want to order a Seiko.
Yeah, but they'll probably flip it before they come to me anyway.
Right, well, I think we're probably going to get kicked out because Handsome Rob literally went down the stairs behind you about 2 minutes ago.
Did you get distracted?
He never looked my direction. It's a shame. But we're going to head off because I think we're going to get kicked out of this building. Thanks for listening. If you want to check out what we've been up to, the first place to check out is the website, scottishwatches.co.uk. On there you can find articles, news, reviews and previews, links to our Instagram Live videos, our YouTube videos, other podcasts. All the good stuff that we put up there. If you'd like to contribute, because we've now got a space that Ben's moved on and Rick's moved on, get in touch. Just use the contact form. Let us know things you might be interested in helping out with, if that is articles, reviews, etc., etc. But let us know first before you write them, because we have been inundated with lots of reviews of the same watches. And we don't want you spending an hour or two writing something and then 10 other people have done the same thing. So get in touch first. Let us know what you're thinking. We'll let you know if it's a goer or not. Also check out Instagram at Scottish Watches and our YouTube channel, because I've just went and bought a new camera. So you're going to be seeing some video content probably from today's event. Plus that's where we put our Instagram Live uploads as well, after the fact, if you've missed them because you have a day job and we don't because we're on the dole. And that was really about it. So thanks for listening and we will catch you guys soon. And since Rick is not here, it's unfortunate that I'm going to have to say it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.